Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
So what I'm going to do, the first half, we're going to be talking about the I generation and what we've been learning about them. Then the second half, or towards the end, we'll basically discuss, well, what does that mean for us as a church? Like, do we just throw up our hands in the air and say we're done, we can't reach these people? Or do we say, how can we still reach these people knowing what we know about them? Okay? All right. So, this is, just so you understand, this is my family, my wife, my daughter, my son, and my daughter's son. This is the perfect missionary family. And some of you are missionaries who work with organizations, and you know that we have to make this perfect picture. And when I send this out to my supporters, they think, what a perfect family the Englishes are. We want to support them. But what they don't understand is that this is how we get the picture. We spend a day of this in order to get about 2 seconds of that. So, and I think very often with youth culture, it's something very, very similar. If you only look on the outside, and especially people that don't work with young people, they look on the outside at youth culture and they get a picture and they don't understand that that's just not really necessarily the reality. So culture is transient, not static. It means that it always changes. It's completely changing. And marketeers recognize that. The people who are trying to sell you something recognize that. And they adapt their methods accordingly. And the question is, should the church too? Our message never changes. Marketeers, they're always trying to sell Heinz baked beans. For example, the Heinz baked beans, they've never changed what's in that can, but how they sell you that can has changed. So the message of the church, the gospel, that has never changed. But should we change how we express that gospel or how we help people to understand what that gospel is? I would argue that the answer is yes. And in 1 Corinthians 9, 19-23, okay, who knows what that is? Yeah, he doesn't change the core of what he's doing or who he is. But in order to adapt, in order to become like those under the law, he has to understand what it means to be like those under the law. In order to reach the weak, he has to understand, you know, what is the world of the weak? So I think for us, you guys are here as youth ministry people, so you understand this, but we really have to understand the culture that we're trying to reach in order to effectively reach it. And there's some easy ways of doing that. So it's not so hard. So for example, well, thinking about how culture has changed, Generation X. Who hears from Generation X? Some of us. That was, if you're born between 60 and 80. Then Generation Y. Okay, most of you, and I don't think there's anybody here from Generation Z, which is called the I generation these days. Okay, question for you guys. Get into groups of three. And what has been the most popular teen movie franchises in the last 5 years? Yeah, which movies, and generally they've become franchises, have become the most popular for young people in the last 5 to 7 years? So, in groups of three, just discuss. What are the most popular movies right now? All right, so what are some of those movie franchises? What are some of the movies you came up with? Hunger Games. Hotel Transylvania. Okay, yep. What else? Yeah, all of the superheroes. Yep, the Marvel movies. What else? Twilight. Twilight. Star Wars, yeah, that's kind of a new genre of old genre. Here's the ones that I put up there. So Hunger Games, Divergent, Harry Potter, and Maze Runner. Okay, so those are some of the big Marvel, that also is true. I'm going to put that aside for right now because it doesn't necessarily agree with what I'm trying to say. But let me ask you this. What is the storyline of these movies? They all have a very similar storyline. Young person conquering something. What are they conquering? The system. They're conquering an unjust system. Who runs that unjust system? Us, the adults. So, it's young people fighting against an unjust system that was imposed on them, and that insistence was imposed on them by older people. That's interesting. Now, if you just watched one of those movies, you wouldn't think too much of it. But if young people are constantly watching that kind of message, it begins to have an effect. It begins to have an effect. So when I was a teenager, one really popular movie was The Karate Kid. And has anyone watched Karate Kid with Mr. Miyagi? Wax on, wax off, wax on, wax off. Okay, so what is the theme of Karate Kid? What happens there? Old man teaches. Yeah, okay, so the old man is teaching the young man how to deal with problems and karate and things like that. Now, the young boy, Daniel, does he always listen to the old man? No, sometimes he does his own thing. And what happens when the young man does his own thing? It's wrong. It ends in failure. And he has to go to the old man and say, "I'm sorry, Mr. Miyagi, you are right. Please, don't give up on me. Teach me some more." And so that was a message of basically, like, we older generations do have something to teach us. And there's a lot of wisdom in those older generations. Now, my daughter, who is 7 years old, last year, very, very briefly, until I realized what this cartoon was about, started watching a cartoon called Legend of Korra. Have you guys heard of this cartoon? It's officially aimed at eight-year-olds, but, you know, it's on the TV at the time when 5, 6, 7-year-olds are watching it. So Legend of Korra is a very similar-ish type of storyline. You have a young girl learning a martial arts type skill from an older master. Okay, but it's upside down because the young girl very often does her own thing. She doesn't do what the master says. And what happens when she does that? When she ignores the master, who's proved right, her or the master? In this cartoon, she is proved right. And the times when she follows the master, it all goes horribly wrong, and he apologizes to her. Continuously. Every single episode of this cartoon, that's always the storyline. That whenever she listens to him, it goes wrong, and whenever she does her own thing, she proves him to him that she's right. Now imagine that 6, 7, 8-year-olds are watching this. What are they being taught? Okay. So, and thankfully I sat down with my daughter and watched this after about a week and a half of her watching it herself. I wish I had watched it the first time she wanted to watch this. And I was shocked at what now is on TV for young people, for little kids. So I feel like media today, and not all media, but a lot of media, is reinforcing this message to young people that you cannot trust old people. And that has an effect. It really has an effect. So obviously right now my daughter is banned from watching this cartoon, and she can't understand why, because all of her friends watch it. But there you go. But just think about that. If these young people are watching this every day, watching this kind of message every day, what is that telling them? What is that socializing them into being? So, okay. So, I'm going to basically share with you two views of things that people have been learning about young people. The first thing is going to be looking at what media and education systems have been learning about young people from various studies, and then I'll talk about what churches and Christian organizations have been learning. So, first of all, I have a little quiz for you. Social media consumption. How many hours a week are young people online? Okay, well, let me tell you this. In 2014, it was 27.5. That's 2014, 2 years ago. All right, in pairs. See what you think of the answer is. In pairs, write the answer. It would help you to think of yourselves, if you've got a smartphone, how many times do you just whip out that smartphone to check your mail or to... All right, let's keep going. Decreased attention span. Okay, how many seconds? And this is 2014, so again, it's going to be different now. Microsoft study, they wanted to know when someone goes onto a web page, how many seconds do they have before that person will decide, I will stay on this web page and follow through, or I'm gone. They've lost me. And so I would assume this applies for a poster as well. How many seconds do you have to grab someone's attention, a young person's attention? Okay, now let's keep going. And some of you that were on my table yesterday, you know the answer to this next question, so don't be too open. Generation X, that's my generation. How long could we concentrate for? So that means how long could we listen to somebody speaking who was just standing at the front and speaking? How long could we pay attention for? And when you think about how the speakers here are speaking. Most of them are speaking in this style, that, you know, without using presentations, just talking. So, Generation X, how many minutes could we focus for in school or in a sermon? Yeah, write it down. Tell me what you think it is. And then Generation Y, that's most of you guys, 20-year-olds. Okay, and this study is 3 years old, so it's going to be different again for the I generation. And then the I generation, how many minutes? Come on, quick. Decide what you think the answer is. Okay? And now before I give you the answer, actually, think about this. How long are the talks in your camp, in your youth ministry, in your church? All right, so here are some of the answers. Social media consumption. How many hours or minutes, days? What did you write? 50? 42? 35? 50 to 70 hours a week. 50 to 70 hours a week. That's 10 hours a day. Now, you could say, I don't believe that. But let me ask you this. Even while you've been here in the forum, how often have you gotten out your phones and just, you know, checked your mail, looked on your Facebook account, gone online, and we're adults? And do any of you guys have wives or husbands who are teachers in schools? Oh, okay. So my wife is a teacher in a high school, and she's been quite shocked at how much the young people are online. And actually, one of her colleagues was in Finland on a teaching exchange, and she said that in Finland, the students aren't even subtle about it. They just sit there during class with their phones doing this. Can you imagine that? So, 50 to 70 hours a week online. Okay, decreased attention span. Oh, I should have asked you. 8 seconds. Actually, that was 2 years ago, so now it's going to be less. It's a lot. It would be much less now. Yeah. So, 3 seconds. 3 seconds. So, think about your website for your ministry. Think about the posters that you create for your ministry. Are you going to grab those people within 3 seconds? Think about that. Do we need to redesign how we create our websites, how our posters look? 3 seconds.
Thank you.
Okay, so the I generation, your youth ministry. Okay, six. Actually, this study is 2 years old. I can't find a more recent one. 6 minutes. 6 minutes. 6 minutes. After 6 minutes, they're doing this. Now, this does not mean that your sermon talk can only be 6 minutes. It means that within every 6 minutes, you have to change something. You have to re-grab their attention. You have to show a video. You have to ask a question. I've been doing this to you guys already. I've been saying, get in twos and discuss. Every 6 minutes, or within every 6 minutes, you have got to significantly change something about the way you're speaking to this generation. Start telling a story. Tell a joke. Something. Jump up and down. But every 6 minutes, you cannot just stand there and talk. Every 6 minutes. Okay, some other things. My generation, we were moral relativists, a lot of you guys are as well. A moral relativist, that is someone that says, I've got my truth, you've got your truth, that's okay, I can live with that. What's good for me is good for me, what's good for you is good for you, that's fine, we're different. Okay, but moral individualists, this one's more tricky. Anyone know what that means? And this is what this generation has become. It means that they can hold two completely conflicting views in their minds at the same time and hold both to be true. Does that make sense? Ah, you say yes. You understand that. Both of them are true, even though they're completely conflicting. And you saw this in the video yesterday, for example. Like, he obviously was not a female Chinese, but okay, you can be a female Chinese, that's fine. Now the eyes were saying, no, you're not. But somewhere in that person's framework, the audience, they were saying, okay, yeah, okay, you can be a female Chinese, that's okay. But obviously, there must be some part of that person's audience's body that's saying, you're not a female Chinese. Does that make sense? In our context, in a Bible study, you could be discussing sexual purity. And in the Bible study, that teenager can be saying, yes, we must stay pure. It is wrong to sleep with your girlfriend outside of marriage. And they say that and they fully believe it, also fully knowing that they're planning to sleep with their girlfriend that night. And somehow, they've compartmentalized the two different things. So moral individualists, that's kind of interesting for us. Two conflicting views, truths, can exist at the same time in one person's brain. Okay, rewired brain, especially by pornography, and actually Dave's done some more studies about this, so you can talk to him a bit more about that. And again, actually I should have changed this. Start at 10, start at 8 these days. And this isn't when someone first just comes across pornography as a mistake. This is when some young people are beginning to watch pornography on a regular basis. Okay, information and programming at their fingertips, you guys know that because it's you, it's us. But what does this mean for us? For me, it means that I don't remember things as well as I used to. Because I don't have to remember anything as well as I used to. Because everything's in my phone. Okay, advertising must be personal and visual, non-static. Everything's about you. It's personalized to you. Most of you have Facebook, and on Facebook there are advertisements. What are those advertisements of? You guys know? Have you ever?
They choose your age, they choose your profession.
It's actually more focused than that.
They know what you like.
Yeah, how do they know what you like? What are those advertisements? Think about this.
They read what you post, see where you visit.
It's even more. Okay, your Google search. Whatever you search for last is going to be the advertisement on your Facebook page. Think about that. So, advertising right now is very, very focused on what you are thinking there and then, what you've been searching for there and then. That is now the advertisement that Facebook will give you. Okay, FOMO, fear of missing out. Have you guys heard of this expression? Most of you have. Okay, this can work in our favor. So basically, young people today, they make a decision about if they're going to go somewhere. And we were very, very similar, but it's more so these days. Based on not, will I enjoy this event, but who of my friends are going to be there? And if I'm not going to be there, am I going to miss the fact that I wasn't there in my social circle? Does that make sense? I don't want to miss out on something. I will hate it, but I have to go because I don't want to miss out. So the fear of missing out. We can use this to our advantage when we're advertising our events. Okay, they're advocates for change, but they don't necessarily want to work for change. So click, like, click, 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 click. But when the clicking has to become action, then, unless all my friends are doing it, then I've got FOMO, I have to do it. Okay, and they enter puberty. Younger, stay longer. And these are some things that I think are more common knowledge. So today's 12-year-old is, well, my generation's 14-year-old, I would say. Especially in terms of physical as well. Physically, we're changing. And stay longer. I mean, you guys are at the age where you're still probably playing on your Xboxes at home. Whereas when I was younger, like, we stopped playing with video games when we were 17, 18, and now we're starting again because it's what everyone's doing. Okay. I don't want to miss out. Okay, and then there are many studies that are about multitasking. Some studies have said, yes, multitasking is, you know, does characterize this generation. But actually, other studies have said no. So it depends on who you ask. I can't give you a definite yes, we can multitask, or no, we can't, because the studies are contradicting each other right now. So those are some things that the media and educational studies have shown us about young people. Just some other things. So, fully digital, constantly online, with social media, increased attention span, rewired brain, FOMO, advocates for change. The Harvard Business Journal, here's something else. This is something that my wife especially has been picking up on, lack of empathy. A lack of empathy. So my wife, she read a study last year that said young people can no longer tell what mood you are in based on looking at your face. Does that make sense? And when she read the study, she's like, rubbish. That can't be true. But then she came home from school one day and was like, it's true. Like, my students cannot read my mood based on what I'm doing with my face anymore. I haven't seen that study, so I can't say it's true, but I'm realizing with my children it is true. They can't read my emotions very well. And by the way, Facebook for us gives us a wonderful opportunity, because young people will write things on Facebook that they would never tell us in person. And that's something, I have a whole other seminar about how to use Facebook in youth ministry, but Facebook is a great tool. And I know that there's this great debate, should we use Facebook or not? And I know of a lot of adults that say, I will never use Facebook, but I would say that it is a tool that youth ministry leaders have never had before in knowing what is happening in the lives of our young people. So I think it's a tool we should use. I don't necessarily think it's a wonderful thing in young people's lives, but I think we're missing out on a chance if we don't use it. So that's a whole other. Okay. The Harvard Business Review, they wrote an article about the I generation last year, and this is kind of what their things, their summaries were. You have to personalize everything, connect through social media, excite with content, use mobile technology to reach iGens. Okay, my question for you guys, are we doing that in our ministries? Some yes, some no, but if we're not, we're going to have to sooner rather than later. Okay, and this is how they summarized the article. To reach iGens, we need to be transparent, personal, and overly social. Marketeers either change the way they communicate with this generation, or iGens will move on to brands that do. Okay, now, there's three words here that are really important for ministries, I think. And especially if you're putting together a talk. What are the three words here that I think are really important? Yeah. Transparent, personal, and overly social. Transparent, personal, and overly social. And I think we know this from our own youth ministry contact. Relational ministry is the way we need to work these days. And if we're going to have a relational ministry, if we want young people to trust us, to believe what we say is true, we have got to be transparent. And that means that I think we need to be open to talk about our own mistakes and our own failures. And we have to be wise in how we do that. But I think it's important that we don't try to put ourselves up as like, I am the perfect youth worker, I am the Christian leader, follow me. I think young people see through that, and they write us off if we act that way. So it's important to be transparent. It's important to be personal. To use stories, to spend time with those young people, and it's important to be overly social. Now here's a question, thinking about your churches, think about your church pastor. When they give a sermon, are those sermons in any way transparent or personal? Now, I don't know. Now, what you could say is they don't have to be because our young people aren't in our church service, and that's fine, maybe. But what I would say is today's I generation are tomorrow's adults, and they're not going to change. So I think it's really important for pastors now and for us, people who work with pastors, to help people to understand as your congregation changes, we're going to have to change the way we preach. We're going to have to change the way we preach and be more transparent and more personal. And think about 6 minutes. 6 minutes. Okay. So, youth ministry specialists. These are things that I've experienced myself, that friends of mine have experienced, and also some studies in America from Christian colleges have been learning about young people. Well, what have you guys noticed? Who's been in ministry more than 5 years? Most of you. Okay. Okay, this is an American study. It came out 4 years ago, and there's the book of the study is in the bookstore, and I highly recommend it. But they were trying to address why the 50 to 75% of church, those aren't our kids that come to Christ, those are our kids who were raised in Christian families, why do they leave the church when starting college? So that's something you've maybe heard about these studies that have been happening in America, that a lot of millennials are leaving the church. Why is that happening? So Something else that people have been learning. So, and Dorian, you said this perfectly. Our generation, we were passive consumers. You'd turn up to a youth group and you'd say, entertain me. And you'd be happy to be entertained. I don't want to lead anything, just let me know. Look, I'm just here to be a consumer. But young people today, actually, they want to be active participants. So they want to actively learn. They want to be involved in how the youth ministry is run. Not all of them, but many of them. So 10 years ago, even, passive consumers. Nowadays, active participants. Okay, a lot of young people, their Christian framework is not so much what we would say a discipleship framework, it's moralistic therapeutic deism. Moralistic therapeutic deism. Do anyone know what that means? I'll explain it. So moralistic moral is about being good. So if I'm good and, there is a God who loves me. He wants me to have a good life, and the deal is I have to try and be good. So that's what Christianity is for a lot of young people today. I have to try and be a good person, and then God will give me a good life. Yes, God is my cosmic counselor. God is my cosmic counselor. Yeah, and now think about how did this happen, and think about the messages that you guys have given, and I think about messages that I used to give 15 years ago in my youth group. Jesus loves you. Jesus loves you. Jesus loves you. Jesus loves you. Follow him. Your life, you'll be happier. He's got a plan for your life. Follow him. Jesus loves you. And sometimes in the past, you know, I used to sell Jesus because I really want these guys to have that relationship. Sell Jesus. And what I was doing was giving a very one-sided view of the gospel. And we realized that when those young people came to Christ, and then we would say, okay, now you have to take up your cross and follow him. But wait a minute, taking up the cross? That wasn't the deal. I wanted this Jesus loves me deal. So we have to be careful, because you can look at that and think, how can young people end up with that kind of theology? And then think about, what are you saying at camp? What are you teaching at camp? Okay, young people, overly busy or very bored at the same time? Have you guys experienced that? I'm so bored, but I can't do that, I'm so busy. I'm so bored, I can't do that, I'm so busy. Sometimes I think that about myself as well. Okay, goal or action oriented to community. So young people live in tribes. They live in tribes. They like to be with their friends and do things with their friends. Broken families. How many? Now, when I was a teenager, I think one of my friend's parents was divorced. That was it, just one. Now, in your youth ministries, what percentage of your teenagers come from divorced families now? About half, 50%. Uh-huh. So we have a lot of young people coming from broken families in our ministries. Here's something. Young people today are seeking to be loved and understood, especially by parents. 2 years ago, we did a study in Slovakia about what are the number one felt needs of young people. Daniel, were you a part of that study? You weren't? But it was done in Compass. And what was the number one felt need? Do you remember? Okay, so, and there's a really surprising outcome. The number one need, the one thing that young people wanted more than anything else, was a better relationship with their parents. A better relationship with their parents. This wasn't Christian teenagers. This was all teenagers that this study was done with. Their number one felt need, a better relationship with my parents. Which is really interesting, because a lot of parents I know think their teenagers don't want anything to do with them. But young people want to be understood. Okay, an authentic community versus entertainment. So again, 10 years ago, I think entertainment was the key to getting young people having fun. But now it's creating that authentic community. And as you said, they want to talk about hard topics. They are open to the gospel. They are open to the gospel. The problem with being open to the gospel is that they're also open to every other spiritual dimension out there as well. They're open to everything. So the challenge for us as the church is to reach those young people with the truth of the gospel before somebody else tries to blind them with some other truth. Okay, so here's a challenge. And this was very nicely summed up by a Catholic youth worker magazine last year. It's difficult to call teens to a relationship with Christ when they don't know what a relationship is. It's difficult to teach them about faith when they think they know all there is to know. It's difficult to help them integrate the gospel into their everyday lives when they don't see the conflict between what the church teaches and how their peers behave. And it's difficult for them to appreciate God's love and mercy when they see both as their birthright and not gracious gifts no one deserves. Oh, those are some interesting challenges for us. But I think there is hope, and I'll get to that in a few minutes. Okay, I'm going to come back to this study, Sticky Faith, because I think it's so important even for us in Europe. And again, this study was looking at why do church-raised kids leave the church? So these are your good Christian teenagers. Now, in our context, a lot of our teenagers came to faith as teenagers through our outreach ministries, but we do also work with a lot of young people who are church-raised young people. And yes, this is an American study, but I think it has some truths for us as well. Now, one thing that is different about America is that when you go to college in America, you physically leave your family. You go to a college that is a long way away from home. And in Central and Eastern Europe especially, a lot of our young people stay in the city where they were raised. So that's something that could change some of the statistics for us. But I still think that there are very important lessons to be learned from this study. So, now what they did was that they looked at who left the church, and then they examined the ministries of those young people and tried to look for what do these ministries have in common, and also who stayed in the church. And they examined those ministries and what did those ministries have in common. Does that make sense? So they're trying to learn what you should never do and learn, but you know, what should we be doing? Okay, and so here's what they learned about those people who were leaving the church. There was a focus on Christian behavior or moralistic therapeutic deism rather than true discipleship. That is what the youth ministries were teaching, Christian behavior. Okay, now three of you are yawning right now. That means I'm either very boring or the air conditioning is... It's a six-minute thing. I know. So... But think about what are we teaching in our ministries? Think about that. Are you teaching Christian behavior or true discipleship? Okay, students were not prepared for life outside of the youth ministry bubble. And in America, it's a little bit more extreme because a lot of young people go to a Christian high school and then they go to their Christian youth group and all their friends are Christians. It's like a whole Christian bubble. But in some of our ministries, we have something very similar because young people come to Christ and they love our church ministry so much sometimes that, you know, Monday they're with us, Tuesday they're with us, Wednesday they're with us, Thursday they're with us, Friday we might let them see their parents, Saturday and that does happen in our ministries as well sometimes. And what they realized was that these young people, they had been socialized into conforming with the group norm. Does that make sense? They were socialized into conforming with the group norm, not living their faith wherever they are, which meant that when they went to college, on their dorm room, they want to make friends, and there are no Christians in their dorm. How do they make friends? They conform with the group norm. And the group norm very often takes them on a path very far away from Christianity. So, conforming with the group norm. So that's something that's for us important. Are we keeping hold of our young people too much, or are we equipping them, even as teenagers, to live out their faith in their school, in their community? That's good, that's good. And we need to challenge that. But the main thing is to equip our young people to be Christ in their school systems and not protect our young people from the world. We need to equip them to be Christ in the world and not protect them from the world. Because sooner or later, they will be in the world. And what often happens, even in our, and this is like the hidden secret, in my church, for example, I've recently found out that a lot of people left the church. Like people who are now in their 50s, 60s, 70s, they're not in the church anymore, and it's the hidden secret. And the reason why, I think, is because they were, again, they were raised into a religious system, not into a faith. So, okay, the final thing is that the students were never really a part of the wider church community. Their youth ministry was a parachurch within the church. Does that make sense? So, and in some churches in America, the youth group meets at the same time as the adult church, even. Like, and there's no, yes, yes, yeah. And they're not part of one church, they're just, you never meet the rest of the church. Okay, and we'll talk a little bit about why that's important later. But those are the three things that most likely led to a young person walking away from their faith when they went to college. Okay. Those three things. Now, but there are churches that do a fantastic job of raising their young people. There are ministries that do an amazing job of preparing their young people for college. And they had two things in common. The churches that kept their young people. And the first was this. Parents understood that they are the primary disciplers in those churches. They didn't let the youth ministry do the discipling. They understood that they are the primary disciples for their children. So parents are the number one discipler. Okay, number two, active integration of the young people into the wider church community. The more integrated the young people were into the wider church community, the more likely they were to stay with their faith when they went to college. The more integrated they were into the wider church community, the more likely their faith was to survive that whole college thing. And you're nodding. I don't know if you have a similar experience. And the thing I love about this study is that it completely confirms everything that I learned about youth ministry in the Czech Republic, because I have also lost a lot of young people when they went to college. And I have also asked, why does this happen? And I've also seen that some of my young people didn't lose their faith when they went to college. And so this study for me, it's one reason why I like it, because it gave me answers to what I was already seeing was a problem with my own ministry in the Czech Republic. So I think that this is true in our context too. So think about that with your churches. How integrated are your young people into the wider church community? Do you actively try to do that or not? There's a question. Okay. These are some interesting questions to think about. We're not going to discuss these right now, but these are some things to think about in the afternoon. They're in your book, so. How long is a typical sermon or talk in your youth ministry? How does your ministry equip teenagers to become leaders? Okay, so we're almost towards the end. Here's something I've learned about working with young people or keeping young people in a ministry long term. Of course, we all know that for young people to want to be in a ministry, it needs to be fun. Young people are young people. It needs to be fun. And what else should a ministry be if it wants to keep and attract young people long term?
Food.
Food, okay, yeah.
Something to offer.
Something to offer? How do you mean? It has to have meaning for them. Okay, and you've actually, most people talk about fun and relational, but you've actually jumped ahead. So fun and community, relational ministry, those are two really, really important things if you want to have a long-term ministry that is changing young people's lives. And a relational ministry or a ministry that creates a strong community usually has a shared goal. When you're working towards something together, that's how stronger community is created. But I think in Central Eastern Europe, we have this missing ingredient in a lot of our ministries. The young people have to feel like, I'm growing. I'm growing. It has to have meaning. It could be that I'm helping my community. Think about a non-Christian context. Why do young people go to sports clubs? I'm becoming a better soccer player. I'm becoming a better karate person. And I think a lot of our ministries, if we're not keeping young people, this might be the missing link, is that your ministry isn't helping the young people to feel like, I am growing somehow by being a part of this ministry. I'm learning how to do something. I'm learning how to organize events. It could even be like, I'm learning how to play the guitar. but somehow I am growing as a person. As a sideshow, in the last 3 years, I've started to work with adults a lot more, and I've realized that there are three things that are really important if you want to reach adults. The first thing is that it needs to be fun. The second thing is that it needs to be relational. And what do you think the third thing is? No, it's beer. But you know, no, I'm growing. So that's really, really interesting. Most of my youth ministry skills, I'm now putting into the adult context, and it works. So you are being perfectly trained to work with all generations. Okay. Now, can you get back into your twos and threes? And based on all the things that I've said today, we need to end in a minute. Okay, so we have 5 minutes. Just think about what are two changes that maybe you could or should make in your ministry based on some of the things that I've said today or that some of you guys have said. What two things were like, wow, if we don't respond to this soon, we're in trouble. Does that make sense? So just two things that for you are like, this is really important. We need to begin to think about reacting to this. Now, I don't at all in any way, shape, or form have all the answers. I'm trying to work this out the same way that you guys are. But based on things I've been learning, I've been thinking about a lot of what ifs. What if we were to do this instead of this? And actually, some of these what ifs are found in the Bible. So the first what if, which I think is really important, and we keep talking about this all week, is what if we discipled the few as Jesus did? Thinking about what were we talking about, the characteristics of iGenerations, personalized. What were some of those Harvard Business Review words? Transparent. So if we were to actually have a youth ministry system where we really did disciple the few or focus on the individual rather than the masses, that could have a big effect. And you know, it's what Jesus did. And actually, this would also address the idea of moral compartmentalism. If young people could see that we as mature Christians, we live what we believe all the time. We don't have our Christian persona and our non-Christian persona. We just are Christians, and that's what Christianity is. And the only way that young people can learn to see that in our lives is if we spend time with those young people on lots of different types of contexts. So, discipling the few as Jesus did. So what if we were to do that, and our ministries were structured around that, rather than around putting on a big show, a big performance? Okay, program change. I don't know, in your ministries, if your young people are passive consumers or active participants. And what I mean by active participant isn't that we play a game. It's that your young people are involved in leading your ministry or parts of your ministry. They feel like they're a part of the process of putting this together. And that doesn't mean that you have to let them lead everything, but it means that you're helping them to come alongside you as you plan your ministry, so that they feel like they are active participants in how your ministry is run. Okay, another program change, and for some of your churches, this isn't important, but for some of you, in a church that I work with in the Czech Republic, their dorost is from age 8 to 15. So 8-year-olds and 15-year-olds together. I have been trying to tell this church that 8-year-olds and 15-year-olds should not be in the same ministry, but that's the way the denomination works. That's what our dorost age is. But I think it's a very ill-informed way to run a children's ministry. And actually, they're having problems with the 13 to 15-year-olds, and they can't understand why. And when I speak to the leader's answer is, you know, these 13-year-olds, they just have to learn that they have to blah, 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 blah. And whereas I look at that and think, well, those 13-year-olds are being 13-year-olds. I think that you as leaders have to learn that blah, 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 blah. So, and a lot of you, when I've spoken to you about your youth ministries, you are age segregated in a lot more of a wiser way. But some churches, especially in Central and Eastern Europe, they still cling to the older segregations. But the maturity levels have changed, and so our program should change with that too. Okay. Recognize, call, and nurture future leaders while they are still young. Recognize, call, and nurture future leaders while they're still young. Do you do that in your ministry? For many, many years, I didn't. I am the leader. You are the teenager. But now I think it's really... And this differs because I work with some churches in some small little towns in Estonia or Ukraine. Like when young people go to college, that's it. They're gone. And they have this really big problem with their ministries because they don't have college-age people in their cities because they're in a small little town with no college. And so they either have adults running the ministry or teenagers running the ministry or just teenagers running the ministry. And what I would say is I think adults should be running youth ministry. I think people of older generations are vitally important to young people. But I think that even 15, 16-year-olds can begin to be developed as leaders. And you have to be careful how you frame that. And by the way, I'm giving a seminar this afternoon about that. So, but I think in our ministries, we very successfully began to develop 15, 16-year-olds as leaders. So, okay, integrate young people into the wider church community. And if you get nothing else from today, I would say this is the number one. This is the number one. We have got to find a way to have our young people be a part of the wider church communities. And you guys have said this yourselves. Young people want to have those serious conversations. They want to be understood. And the research shows in Slovakia, they want to be having those relationships with older people. It's vital. And especially if our young people come from unchurched families, they need to see what a Christian family looks like. And that can only happen if they become a part or have contact with those families. What I will say, I was visiting a church in Estonia last year, 2 years ago, and after church, the entire church was talking together. It wasn't young people, old people. It was groups of all generations talking together. It was amazing for me to see. And I asked the pastor, how did this happen? And he said that they made a decision a number of years earlier that they would never create a ministry team without using many generations. So for example, on their Alpha team, they ran Alpha. Their youngest girl was 16. Their oldest man was 70. And all generations in the middle were part of running that program together. And really interesting. It took them a while to make it work. But years later, I came to that church and I could see the fruit of that decision. That's something. It can happen. And I think it's very important for it to happen. Okay. Digital and visual media in church ministry. I am not very good at media. I am terrible at media, in fact, but if I was to run a church, I think I would understand that I'd need to find someone who is good at media and begin to use it. And there are a lot of tools out there for that as well. And then equip church leaders to communicate in a way that reaches the I generation. I think that many of our pastors today, they don't understand that this generation is different. They don't understand it. No one's teaching them this. So I think it's important for us to try to help our older generations. And it won't happen by us speaking with our pastors in a way that's confrontational. But if we can come alongside our pastors and have those relationships with them and say, hey, you know what, I was reading the other day or I learned the other day about this, about young people. Can you help me unpackage that? And if the pastors can be a part of helping you to unpackage what you know, it can help them understand, there's something that I need to learn here as well. So I've learned in my years that if you confront a pastor, sometimes it's very hard for them. But if you come alongside a pastor, it's easier to teach them. Okay. The sign of time's up has gone up, so thank you very much for listening. And if you have any other questions for me during the break, later on in the forum, I'd be happy to answer them.